Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rise, please. This is the Savage Nation. At a time like this, we need patriotism, not platitudes. You're listening to the Savage Nation. This is not a ball game. You're watching a world go up into smoke, only 2 years into an administration that has given to revolution. 2 years into his administration, he has nationalized the auto industry. He has nationalized the health industry. He is destroying our allies around the world. God only knows what's coming tomorrow. Middle of the night, dream. God says, play the national anthem every day until this Middle Eastern nightmare is over. I intended to do what the message told me. Before the show, I made a prayer, exactly a second before the show. I said, God, you've given me the strength to do this show for 16 years. Please help me do the right thing in the hours that follow and the days that follow, because this is way beyond one man's ability. Let me tell you, you're watching the world go up in smoke. And the question is, which side are you on? It's interesting to me, sitting on the outside looking in, how there is no clear division between liberals and conservatives in the midst of this insanity. It seems to me they have all become one and the same. There's no differential between the Democrats and the Republicans. If we listen to the speech of Boehner, it's the same as Hillary Clinton. If we listen to the prognostications of Fox News, it is virtually the same as MSNBC and CNN. And that is a very strange phenomenon, is it not? Why is it then that the government media complex are all in favor of the overthrow of the established order, all in favor of the overthrow of our ally for the last 31 years, and all in favor of God only knows what follows? Après moi le déluge, it was said, the French thought that after the revolution that they experienced in the 1700s, peace would reign through France. But did it reign through France? What do you think happened after the dictatorship happened? After the 1789 revolution in France, the revolutionaries won. And then what happened? The anger that sparked the revolution in France gave rise to a Jacobin regime that hunted down its enemies door to door. And what do you think is going to happen after these Twitterers go home? What do you think is going to happen when these boys in dungarees who apparently been watching too much Al Arabiya are going to go home and suddenly food prices are 700, 800, 900% more than they were pre-Mubarak? What is going to happen is obvious. They're going to go door to door, and they're going to knock on the doors of the large homes in Cairo, and they're going to knock on the doors of those who live in comfortable apartments, and they're going to ask the owners, how did you afford this apartment? Where did you get the money to buy this apartment? Now, that's what happens if the mobs win. Now, what happens if Mr. Mubarak's friends and the military win? Well, then there's going to be a new state. It won't be the same state. There will be an alliance between Mubarak, the military, and the middle classes, who will be terrified that no such uprising ever happens again. And I don't understand how you don't see what's coming. You didn't see the thousands of young people standing all night in front of their houses and stores to protect them from the looters. It was almost identical to what went on in Los Angeles in the last decade, if you remember that one. People had to take to their own buildings with guns to protect themselves from the mobs in Los Angeles. And so, therefore, which side are you on? It's easy to say, well, I'm on the side of good. I'm on the side of liberation. I'm on the side of democracy. Well, do you think democracy can exist in Egypt? I don't think so. I don't think a liberal democratic regime can arrive in Egypt, nor can it survive in Egypt. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Barghisi in the Wall Street Journal pointed out today, without the knowledge of the likes of Locke and Burke, Hamilton and Jefferson, Egypt is doomed to either unbridled radicalism or continued repression. They don't know who John Locke was. I don't think Barack Obama knows who Locke, Burke, Hamilton, and Jefferson are. I'm certainly positive that the people in the American media never heard of Locke, Burke, Hamilton, and Jefferson. I am positive they don't understand which side they're on, but I'm positive I've never seen anything like this alliance between the government media complex. Now, is it all that clear? Is it all that clear that it's simply an orderly world under Mubarak, an ally of America for 31 years? Or is it really something more? Why is it that the Arab world is blowing up now, while the Soviet Union fell 20 years ago? The Asian world came apart at Tiananmen Square in certain ways. Why is it suddenly that it is happening now for the first time in the Middle East? And of all places, why is it happening in the least of the repressive nations in the Middle East? That's the interesting part. Why was there no orchestrated attempt on the part of the government media complex to overthrow the Hitler of our time 2 years ago when the Iranians dreamed of a lack of repression? Where were all of the loudmouths in the media who are all so brave now, calling Mubarak names, who have said nothing but kind things about that little tyrant, the Hitler of our time, the reincarnation of everything evil on the planet, Ahmadinejad? Those who say nothing about the mullahs are suddenly so brazen now to call for the overthrow of Mubarak. Listen to this creep, a man named Gergen on CNN. Listen to this guy.
Mubarak, he's now, you know, sent his thugs out there. I think what the administration now needs to do, if I may say so, is to
right, get off, to get off my radio show. This is the same phony conservative from years ago who went over to CNN and showed his true red colors, who had nothing of the like to say about Ahmadinejad, not one word showing a spine from any of these people. Suddenly they've all grown a spine. The question is, what's going to happen in the next 6 hours, let alone in the next six days? We don't know. We do know this. This revolt in Egypt has been fomented by forces that we don't know, who have used the middle class of Egypt, and in Tunisia, by the way, to do their bidding. In other words, the middle classes in Tunisia and Egypt, those who are more Western than the others, the Twitterers, for example, are the useful idiots of radical factions, in my estimation. But the big question is, why was Obama sitting on the sidelines in the beginning, number one? Two, is Obama and Hillary Clinton, the State Department, the U.S. government itself, involved in the overthrow of this country called Egypt, Tunisia, Jordan? Why? Why do they want to overthrow relatively stable but autocratic governments in the Middle East that have taken 30 or 40 years to build bridges with? This man has only been in office for 2 years. Barack Hussein Obama, both of his fathers were Muslim. That doesn't explain it, because Mubarak is a Muslim. So it's not an issue of the fact that Obama is a Muslim that he's doing this. The issue is that he's a radical. That's the issue. Let's stop focusing on Obama's ethnicity and start focusing on his politics. As I clearly pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty, I spent many, many pages researching his background, his past. I think I've proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the man runs with and is a pan-Leninist. Now, you say you don't know what that means. Just take my word for it. In other words, he's an international communist in plain English. It's just a different variety of the same thing you may have heard 50 years ago, or 40 years ago, or 30 years ago. It explains why he doesn't seem to identify as an American. It explains why he doesn't seem to deal with America's exceptionalism. It explains why he seems to genuflect with every dictator. It explains why he's never on the side of right, he's always on the side of wrong. And it explains, perhaps, why this is happening in the world right now. Obama has only been in power for a little, what, 2 years? 2 years, and look what's happened in this world. Nationalized the auto industry. Nationalized the healthcare industry. Appointed one communist after another as a hidden czar. Put in regulations that people can't follow. Gave exceptions to people who didn't want to sign up for Obamacare. In the hundreds and hundreds, you can buy your way out of Obamacare, as in any banana republic. It's totally corrupt. It's as though we're living in Venezuela. The only thing is that you don't know it yet. And the reason you don't know it is because there's a compliant press. Now, I'm going to stop right now because there's only so much the average audience can endure. There's only so much the average listener wants to hear. There's only so much the average listener can accept at any one time. And I realize that much of what I have said is quite shocking. And much of what I have just said is revolutionary unto itself. And much of what I have just said might be considered conspiratorial. And therefore, it's a no-no for most Americans who think that everything is what they think it is and what they see it to be. And so, therefore, I will now turn to some of the news. Egyptian Foreign Ministry says Obama's words are inciting violence. The Egyptian Foreign Ministry appears to be rejecting Obama's call for an immediate transition from the government of President Mubarak and says that such calls are, quote, inciting violence. He said, what foreign parties are saying about a period of transition beginning immediately in Egypt is rejected, said Foreign Ministry spokesman Hossam Zaki, adding that such calls inflame the internal situation in Egypt. Why would Obama want to inflame the internal situation in Egypt is the question. I do not go so far as to believe he simply wants to see an Islamist revolution around the world. I don't believe it's that scenario. At least I pray to God it isn't that scenario. I can't imagine it would be that scenario. Although I can understand why some given to conspiracy would jump to that conclusion. I do know this. Israel's the big loser here. We're gonna be the second big loser. But if you want to look at this from the point of view of straight ideological doctrinaire Marxism, remember the phrase, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. Do you know who said that? I believe it was Karl Marx. And Karl Marx said, if you want to make an omelet, you've got to break a few eggs. In this case, the eggs are Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan, Yemen, and then Israel. Because if international Marxism can make the new omelet, meaning the new world order, where the capitalists continue to rake in the trillions, then, my friends, it's a neat theory, is it not? Okay, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Is Obama involved in this? And if so, why? I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I quoted in the last segment, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. It was Lenin who said it, not Marx. And it came about when one of Lenin's fellow Bolsheviks asked him to justify the growing number of atrocities they were committing in the name of a socialist future. Lenin said, oh, well, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. My suspicion is that as a pan-Leninist, Mr. Obama is willing to break a few eggs to make the new omelet called the New World Order in the name of a socialist revolution. I'm going to quote somebody right now. Class struggle, he wrote, class struggle. Classes struggle. Some classes triumph, others are eliminated. Such is history. Such is the history of civilization for thousands of years. Chairman Mao Tse-Tung. Here's another quote from Chairman Mao, a favorite of the hippie generation. Changes in society are due chiefly to the development of the internal contradictions in society. That is the contradiction between the productive forces and the relations of production, the contradiction between classes and the contradiction between the old and the new. It is the development of these contradictions that pushes society forward and gives the impetus for the supersession of the old society by the new. In class society, everyone lives as a member of a particular class. And every kind of thinking without exception is stamped with the brand of a class. This is all out of quotations from Chairman Mao Tse-Tung. You're watching nothing less than a revolution occurring, but instead of occurring over a period of weeks or months, it happened virtually overnight with a little help from the American media. Matthew in Cincinnati, Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello.
Go ahead, Matthew. Hello. You're on the radio.
Yes, I think Obama is right. on this Egypt issue.
Well, that's not enough of a statement. Tell us why.
Because Islam is a religion, and it is a world religion, and it should be respected.
Listen, fool. What religion is Mubarak, fool?
Mubarak? He is no religion. He's a secular.
Listen, Putz. Putz, he's a Muslim, you schmuck. What are you talking about? You're making it as though Mubarak is not a religion. He's a Muslim, you moron. Where do you get your information from, you Putz, you?
Huh?
And I take idiots. Michael in Victorville, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Michael? Hello?
Yes, make your point. Stop asking me how I'm doing. You don't know me, for God's sakes.
How you doing, Michael? This is Michael from Victorville, and I'm
hanging up. That's all. That's number two. If you ever get on my show, there's a couple of rules. Never ask me how I'm doing. This is not Breaking One Radio. You don't know me. I don't know you. We're not chatting. It's national radio. Come up with a cogent point, or don't get on my show at all. I can't take this. I kill myself to do this right, and I have to talk to the stupidest people. I'm going to try one more call, then I'm not taking another call all week. Donna in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, you're correct. They're taking advantage of the Obama in the White House. This is a chess game. Obama has been dismantling our economy so that we can't be strong enough to defend Israel.
Right. The big loser here is Israel. Obama and the liberals want Israel gone. They want it divided. They want a Palestinian nation. They want it overnight. They want to see this happen in Israel. And then they want the Jewish state to disappear, to be absorbed into a greater Middle East, so that the New World Order can all be happily won. One new Middle East without Israel.
Savage.
Take pride in your country. We shall survive this regime. We will have a patriotic American in the White House once again. The communists will be gone one day. Order in the world will be restored one day. The military will be used again one day. Trust me. The college Marxists will be gone one day. We're living through a revolution in this country. Very few of you know what we're living through. Millions of you do know what we're living through. I have never seen such an ignoramus, an ignorant media as I do today. Okay, turn off the music. In fact, I have never seen a consistency as I now see between the, quote, left and the right, the conservative and the liberal. All of them are lost. They're all babbling the same thing. They're all saying this is a legitimate grievances of the pent-up demands of the people. They're making Mubarak into the worst dictator in history. They're making him worse than Ahmadinejad. It's astounding to listen to this. And there's only so much I can listen to until I explode. So forgive me if I lose my temper today. I do not have the patience to suffer fools gladly. It may be AM radio. It may be talk radio. I may not be the biggest genius on the planet. I may not be the number one expert on the Near East, but let me tell you something. Common sense I do have, and I know history. And I will tell you, you're witnessing something that did not happen on its own. It was not spontaneous. And Iran and the radical Islamists are waiting in the wings to regain or gain a foothold in Egypt, the largest Arab country on the earth. And God forbid if that happens. That's all I can say. Las Vegas, Sami, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I think you're 100%, more than 100% correct. Everything you said that we've been saying for the last 5-6 days. I've been calling Egypt like every 2 hours to get information. And every time when I call my family, they ask me why this is happening, why all of a sudden the United States, like, they're not supporting Hosni Mubarak anymore after 30 years of support. And they've been told me that people on the street, I remember yesterday he was asking why they have a sign in English, not in Arabic.
Yes, in other words, I'm the only one in the American media, maybe in the world media, who saw the phenomenon that the protest signs, the majority of them, or many of them, in Egypt are pre-printed in block letters and they're in English. Why did I? What was I implying with that?
That somebody else is doing something. Isn't another Egyptian?
Yes, that's correct. That is correct. There are other elements behind the Egyptian people. Now, you called with an observation about the Muslim Brotherhood. What was that, please?
Yes, they said that actually now they start Muslim Brotherhood and with Hamas. They're the one actually released the prisons from their prison last week and give them money and asking to go and burn and destroy all the Egypt stores and everything else.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That didn't make it to Fox News or CNN or NBC, did it? So you're saying the Muslim Brotherhood broke into the jails and let out the worst Muslim terrorists into the streets, and they're behind the looting and the riot and the worst of the attacks on the museum?
Yes. And some of them are in Palestine right now. They went there and sent some video that they're already not in Egypt anymore, and with Hamas. And actually, we have inside news they're involved in what happened in the church, Alexandria Church, at the New Year's Eve. They're involved too.
Yes, and where were all of the brave members of the American media who are oh so on the side of the mobs when the Christians were killed on New Year's Eve? Why did they say not one word? It's heartbreaking to live through these times, Sammy, but that's what we have to do. We have to deal with the cards that we are dealt. We have to live with the cards we are dealt. Raf in New York on WOR, go ahead, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor to talk to you. I'm an Egyptian guy, live here in America for 15 years. You're right on the money in every single point. I want to tell the American people, listen to Dr. Savage. Everything about Egypt you said is 100% correct. I want to add one more thing. You maybe know or you don't know about it. The Iranian and people from Qatar bumping money to the people in the square.
They are distributing money to people in the square to keep them there? The Iranians are distributing money?
Yes. 50 Egyptian pounds for every single one is staying in the square. I know this from people saw that by their own eyes, family member and friends.
There's no question that outside forces are behind this revolution, and that the Obama administration is either knowingly or in an ignorant manner in cahoots with these outside forces, which include our enemies in Iran and Al-Qaeda. Something is terribly wrong with this picture, Raf, to see a great nation of 80 million people with such a strong, cohesive military fall apart in less than a week does not make sense to me. This was planned over a long period of time, and I believe the United States is deeply involved in this.
One more thing, Dr. Savage. The average guy, like you and me, defending their home and their house and their possession. They can't go demonstrate like these thugs. The people.
It's just like in America. It's the same thing in America. The storekeepers, the property owners are not out in the streets screaming for the overthrow of Mubarak. It would be the equivalent if, let us say, the illegal aliens in America took over a city, and the government took the side of the illegal aliens and said to the homeowners and said to the business owners, give them what you own. Give them what you own because they have legitimate grievances. That's exactly what's going on in Egypt. This is a war against the middle class. Make no mistake about it. It can happen here.
It can happen. Will God protect America?
Raf, it can happen here when you have a weak leftist leader like Obama, and you have so many devious communists from the academic world now running the government. This could happen here. That's what eats me alive every day, Raf. I know it could happen here. These people are far more dangerous and more devious than anyone could imagine. Thank you for listening to the Savage Nation, and thanks for giving me your opinion. Now let's take some more callers on the Savage Nation. Harrisburg, PA. Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. I just want to give you your props, your intelligence, and your keen punctuality and keen intelligence, because what you said 3 days ago, other hosts are just repeating it. It's like they listen to your show and do their shows. That's all I have to say, Dr. Savage. Keep up the good work.
Well, I know that the smart... I know people listen. I know they listen, and I know they compare. It's like any other product out there, and the fact is talk radio is a product I'm providing to you. And if the product didn't taste good or if it was a few days old, you wouldn't be buying it anymore. You know, I don't want to go into bashing my competition because there's no benefit to that. But an article came out today about Glenn Beck's ratings collapse. Now, I'm not surprised by that. But the question is, why do you think that Glenn Beck's ratings have collapsed so dramatically between 1 year and the next? Glenn Beck lost one-third of his audience from a year-to-year period. And the question is, how did he go from an audience that was once 2.5 million people a night or more to something like 1.6 to 1.8 million every night, which is about half the rating Beck was getting a year ago? I'm asking the question not so much to bash Glenn Beck, because I think he does a good enough job of it himself. I mean, he's become a parody of himself with the blackboards and the myopic glasses and the chalk. It's a very tiresome act. The question is, why do you suppose you stopped listening to him? And why are the ratings on Fox in general imploding? I think it's a very important question in light of what you're seeing in Egypt. I mean, I can give you the answer, what I'm getting at. What am I getting at? When I turn on Fox and I hear the same commentary as I hear on CNN and the same commentary about Egypt that I hear on MSNBC, I ask myself, why would anyone turn from one channel to the other when it's almost the same? It's the same as listening to Obama one day and John Boehner the next day all saying the same words, legitimate grievances, orderly transition. Why are they stabbing a stabilizing influence like Mubarak in the back? And what do they think will happen after he is gone? As someone pointed out, there's a large difference between flash mobs. Flash mobs who use their little Twitter devices to bring things down, whether it be close off the streets in New York with a bicycle ride on a Friday night around rush hour in order to trap the middle class in their cars and make them fume on the assumption they're going to give up their cars and they're going to ride in the snow in a bicycle like them. That's one thing that the idiotic youth, the flash mobs, can do on a minor key. But now we see what a flash mob has done in Egypt. But the flash mob is not functioning on its own. The flash mob is functioning with someone else pulling their strings. Many, many elements are pulling their strings. And there's no question that the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and Egypt are looking for their opening. It doesn't mean, by the way, that that Al-Qaeda or Iran will gain a tremendous foothold in Egypt. But you should never forget for one second, never forget what I'm about to tell you. It's extremely important that you know this. I will mention a name. Do you know who this name is? I'm going to give it to you right now. Do you know who al-Zawahiri is? Do you know what his country of origin is? Do you have any idea who he is and where he is living? Well, yeah, the question is, what does Zawahiri, Facebook and Twitter and flash mobs have to do? And who is the bigger tyrant? Is the bigger tyrant Mubarak or Ahmadinejad? Who is the greater tyrant? Mubarak or Chavez in our own backyard, in our southern, down in the southern part of South America? Why have we heard nothing about the people in South America being tyrannized by Chavez? Why is it always glowing commentary from the news media and from our own government about Chavez? Why is it they're always on the side of communist tyrants and never on the side of, let us say, different types of tyrants? So as I have to go back to my primary statement, which is Lenin said, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. And I think that our president, being a lifetime Leninist, is breaking a few eggs. In this case, the eggs are Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan, and Yemen. But I will tell you this, there's a dozen eggs in a normal package. And if you think that this egg is going to remain whole, you are mistaken. So let's go back to who I was getting at before, and you must never forget his name. Where did he come from? Why am I mentioning him? Well, one of the key elements of Al-Qaeda, one of the key leaders of Al-Qaeda, happens to be Egyptian. And, of course, he's not in Egypt right now, but don't you think he's thinking about returning? Don't you think he'd like to come back to the Egypt of his youth before he was thrown out by the evil Mubarak? Sure he'd like to come back. And do you really think that the international bureaucrat al-Baradei is going to be a man of the people who's going to bring the people together? He's not that kind of figure by what I can read. He's not that much of a unifying figure. He's a sort of European Union guy who goes to cocktail parties, part of the ruling elite, in other words. The people are not going to rally behind him. The people will generally rally behind a strong man, especially in the Middle East. Mubarak is a strong man. He is not the type of tyrant that we would like in America. Let's be very clear. On the other hand, he's not the worst kind of tyrant that is operating on the world stage today. So the question is, why is our liberal government choosing Hosni Mubarak for the poster boy of all evil on all earth? And why are they not talking about the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood? Why are they not talking about Al-Qaeda in Egypt? Why are they not talking about what Iran is doing behind the scenes over there right now? How in the world can you not see this bigger picture? And so, as I say to you, whether Mubarak's military and his military are successful and they do quell the rioters, in either case, all of the Egyptians have already lost. You kept hearing food prices were very high. You kept hearing there was massive unemployment. For days, I've been trying to reason with the audience listening to this show, saying, how can such a revolution produce anything but food shortages, greater food prices, and greater unemployment? They have destroyed the infrastructure of their nation. They have wrecked their number one industry, which is tourism. What do you think is going to follow this? And never forget that Al-Qaeda's number two, al-Zawahiri, is an Egyptian who left Egypt during Mubarak's successful repression of Egyptian Islamic jihadists in the 1990s. I'll be back.
Savage.
The other day, welcome back to the Savage Nation. The other day when this was emerging, I said the U.S. should have said that although Mr. Mubarak is authoritarian, he did not bring the reforms we would like, we're going to encourage him to do so. He's a stabilizing influence for 31 years. He's been our partner. He's had a peace treaty with Israel at great cost to himself. We're going to support him in any way we can while moving for changes in favor of the people. And we're going to be sending a fleet to the north and south of the Suez Canal to protect this maritime traffic at the Suez Canal. Now, I know that only 2% of the oil supplies in the world flow through the Suez Canal, which is very important for you to know. It's no longer true that most of the oil in the world flows through the Suez Canal, which is very interesting. It's only 2% of the oil in the world, the last I read, goes through the Suez Canal. But obviously, you need to keep that maritime channel open, and the U.S. should be doing everything it can to do so. But Obama didn't do that. He sat on the sidelines. And now that it seems that the revolutionaries are in charge, the revolutionaries are winning, the revolutionaries are going to overthrow Mubarak, suddenly Obama's coming out of the closet and screaming, we need an orderly transition now. We need Mubarak's neck on a block right now. So therefore, he's been behind it. There's no other way to look at this. You know, when you look at the world stage, there's no two ways about it. Either you're with someone or you're against them. So they pulled him down. Him and Hillary Clinton pulled down Mubarak. They're pulling down the leadership in Tunisia and Yemen and in Jordan, God forbid. Why? What do they think will follow? Do they think that a democracy emerges immediately because the people go to a ballot box? Look what happened in Iraq after Bush's idiocy of a war in Iraq. Take a look at who took over. Take a look at how we got screwed in Iraq by the Shiites who took over. By the way, I keep repeating to you, in my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, written about 4 years ago, I said, I pray to God I'm wrong, but this could turn out to be the greatest military disaster in American history, meaning the Iraq War, because if the big winner is Iran, then Iran will be the superpower of the Middle East. It turns out that although Saddam Hussein was a monster, he was a monster amongst monsters, a horrible man, a tyrant. Are you going to tell me that the sacrifice of $1.2 trillion, all of the crippled men, all of the dead men were worth it so that we could free up 24 million Shia who have basically told us to drop dead? They didn't give us a drop of oil out of all of that bloodshed? Why is that? George Bush said that there'd be reparations in the form of oil. So the same thing is happening again. It happened under Bush with the same starry-eyed mentality of democracy here, democracy there. Look at what happened in Gaza. Look what just happened in Lebanon. Open your eyes. There is an Islamist, I didn't say Islamic, There is an Islamist revolution going on in the Middle East, which is not in the interest of world stability and not in the interest of American stability. And yet our president seems to be on their side, not against them. Don't you understand the danger that this poses? I do. Bedford, PA, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you said a while ago, and you posed the question of why Islam is rearing its ugly head, and I do have an illustration.
Let me correct what you just said. I never said why is Islam rearing its ugly head. I said that Mubarak is a Muslim. I said why is radical Islam rearing its ugly head. I didn't say Islam. There's a huge difference.
Okay, well, I'll say Islam. You say radical Islam, but the reason is...
Yeah, well, say what you say. Don't tell me what I said and then try to create more trouble for me, because not all of Islam is the same. Mubarak is not the same as the Muslim Brotherhood. He's been fighting them all his life. So how can you say it's all the same? That's like saying all Americans are the same.
Okay, well, the reason I say that is simply because America has ceased to become a superpower. And let me give you an illustration. You know, the Bible says in Ecclesiastes 1:9 that...
Well, we know that America's not a superpower, not because we aren't a superpower, but because we don't have a superpower leader. That's the reason. Of course we're still a superpower. But we have Obama as the commander-in-chief, which unto itself is a nightmare. And then we have the Stepford Wives in the form of Robert Gates, or Gates of the Defense Secretary, and Mullen, the astonishing Stepford Wife, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They both frighten me because they don't seem to have any real military experience, and they don't seem to be on the side of the fighting man.
Well, what frightens...
Okay, thanks for the call. Please, I don't want to go into now all Muslims this. Mubarak is a Muslim, for God's sakes. Open your eyes.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
As a nation, this regime will one day be gone. One day we will be free of the communist revolutionaries who are running the United States of America into the abyss. This is the big game. This is the Super Bowl of politics you're watching. Watching the big game come down. Right, be seated or whatever you want to do on the Savage Nation. You're watching the big game. You're watching the game being played by an international Marxist named Barack Hussein Obama, with his old cohort Hillary Clinton bringing down our strongest allies in the moderate Muslim world, on the assumption, well, that's the question. What is the assumption? Is the assumption that once these moderate Muslim tyrants fall, a more benign democracy will arise? That's a big gamble, because as you well know, the big player in the Middle East right now is Iran, and certainly Iran is going to take advantage of what's happening because they're deeply involved with orchestrating it, along with a little help from their friends in the U.S. State Department in the minds of many observers who you do not hear on the media. which leads me back to what I said in the last hour. In all the years I've been in this business of, let us say, commentator, that's all I am, as a commentator, I would never say I'm a journalist. I'd be embarrassed to use the word, because the word journalist is a dirty word to me. They're fundamentally activists. They're not journalists, and they're all brainwashed leftists, 99% of them. So I'm not a journalist. I'm a man with an opinion based upon my observations and my background and my history and my reading and my writing and my investigations of the readings and the writings over the time. And so we're watching something go on in front of our eyes, and we have our own opinions. Many of you agree with me. Many of you don't know what to think. Many disagree. But there's something odd going on. CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC all have the same words now about Egypt. They're all saying the same things. Obama and Boehner have the same words, saying the same things. There's almost no diversity, is there? There's almost no diversity of opinion in the media. There's almost no diversity of opinion in the government media complex, is there? So as I say, all I am able to give you is my own analysis. Talk radio is a product. What I'm giving you is a verbal product. Now, if this product were somehow contaminated, or if this verbal product that I provide you is a copycat of someone else's product that you heard earlier in the day on too regular a basis, or if the product were, let us say, in some ways stale, you wouldn't be listening to this show at all. But you are, and the numbers are bigger this year than they were last year. While Glenn Beck's have fallen by about 35%, as have Scarface's and others on Fox News. I guess they thought the party would go on forever, no matter what they did, no matter how much they ha-ha'd and hoo, and hee-hee and ha-ha and hoo-hoo, and finally showed their true liberal faces, that you, the moron, wouldn't know the difference. But apparently you do know the difference. And so all I can say is thank you for listening, and I hope that I don't disappoint you today or tomorrow. It's a one-day thing. It's a day-by-day thing. We are watching a revolution. Let's be clear what this is. This is a revolution. This is not an uprising. This is class struggle. It's class warfare on a global scale. But what's intriguing about this rioting in Egypt did not come from the poor. This rioting came from the middle class. This rioting came from those who consider themselves to be educated and somewhat westernized. And they, in fact, are the useful idiots of far more devious forces than even they can imagine. If you read quotations from Chairman Mao Tse-tung, you see that he wrote the following. He wrote, "Classes struggle, some classes triumph, others are eliminated. Such is history, such is the history of civilization for thousands of years." Mao Tse-tung. So we're watching class struggle on a gross scale. It's very much like the Russian Revolution, but it's no longer ancient history, it's modern history. It's the first vision of a mass revolution that we've seen in our lifetime, and it's occurring right in front of our eyes. Now, which side are you on is the question. If you are a doctrinaire thinker, you would, of course, put it in terms of Mubarak dictator, people oppressed, I'm in favor of the overthrow of the dictator and the liberation of the people. That's if you are a doctrinaire thinker, or if you don't want to think too hard. There are other ways to look at it, of course. You can look at it the complete other way, which is that Mubarak, as bad as he is America's best friend and a stabilizing force in the Middle East. And once he goes, radicals will take over Egypt, whether it be the Muslim Brotherhood or al-Qaeda or Iran or Iran's front men. And then, of course, Israel will be at war, which could lead to a nuclear war. That's the other side. It could go in either way. And I suppose there's always a third, fourth, fifth way to look at things. But none of us can predict with any certainty what's going to happen tomorrow morning. We do know, surprisingly, that Mubarak didn't just get out of the way as Obama wished he would do. We know that Mubarak yesterday announced that he would step down at the end of his term in September when new elections would be held. But that wasn't fast enough for the pan-Leninist in the White House. He today said, get out of the way now. Hillary Clinton, get out of the way now. And so that encouraged the Iranian front men in the streets of Egypt to burn, to loot, to riot, and to even get more violent. They encouraged, in other words, they encouraged the masses in the street to continue their looting, burning, and their violence. That's what the Obama administration has done. It would be as if our cities erupted because the illegal aliens or the other so-called dispossessed decided to become organized and to go out in the streets and take over. And the police looked the other way. And then the White House came out and said, I'm on the side of the illegal aliens, or I'm on the side of the dispossessed. Do you think that that's something you'd like to see in America? Because that's what Egyptians, that's what middle-class Egyptians are seeing right now. You don't see the pictures of those living in nice apartments or those living in the suburbs who live just like you. You don't see what they're having to do on a daily basis to protect themselves from the mobs. The only parallel we've seen in modern American history is during the L.A. riots, when most notably the Koreans went in the front of their own stores with guns and protected themselves from the rioters because there was anarchy and the police nor the military could help them. So certainly we fear this happening in America. But with a communist in the White House, I don't have any other words for him, anything is likely to happen. I also quoted Lenin in the last hour. If you want to make an omelet, you've got to break a few eggs. That's when Lenin was asked about the atrocities that were being committed by the Bolsheviks or with the early communists who were mercilessly killing people and stealing their property. Why was Lenin permitting this? Lenin, the early communist, said with a smile and a smirk, the way you see on the TV screens, the media, with that superior smirk. If you want to make an omelet, you've got to break a few eggs. And so the White House, being taken over and run by lifetime revolutionaries, are in essence creating an omelet. The eggs are Tunisia today, Egypt today, perhaps Jordan, Yemen tomorrow. And those are only four of the dozen eggs in the box. Eventually, Israel will be smashed by this administration so that there can be a Palestinian state and Obama can get a Nobel Peace Prize from his communist brethren over in Sweden. The fact of the matter is, though, will that happen? Will something happen to stop this omelet from being whipped and baked to its completion? I'll go to your callers now on the Savage Nation, the calls on the Savage Nation. Stuart in New York on WOR, go ahead. You're up on the air. Go ahead, please.
I just don't even know what to say. I watch the TV. I listen to the radio. It's like if you didn't think the media could go any lower, they actually have.
Yes, they have.
You can't understand what's happening, why it's happening. I was telling your screener, you watch this guy Anderson Cooper, you see tents. I think I'm looking at Woodstock, like there's a nice little protest, and Everybody's just having a peaceful time.
Yes, he's a fool. He's an empty-headed fool who thinks it's all a big party. What is he, over there in his flak jacket with the old rolls of film that they used to carry around? They say he was punched in the head. He doesn't look any the worse to wear for me. Does Anderson Cooper look to you like he was beaten up? Already he made himself bigger than the revolution. Typically the media. Typical media. He's already bigger than the whole revolution in Egypt. Is he got slapped in the head by an Egyptian?
Got 500 channels and internet, and they're all the same. I mean, everything's been dumbed down.
They're all over their head. What I see are frightened children who don't even know what's going on. They have no context. They don't understand history. They don't know what to say, and they're standing there dumbfounded. And so, as I say, I try to bring a little bit more to it. I don't know if I'm doing so. Do you appreciate any differential in what you've heard so far in the Savage Nation today?
Mike, you're bringing more to it, but I still don't get it. I still don't know who's behind it. Everybody's speculating. Can't we get anybody with any knowledge on?
You mean, what you're asking is, how did this happen so quickly? Isn't that what you're asking?
Yes. Why did it happen
now? All right. So first we have to pose the correct question in order to arrive at the correct answer. So let's pose the correct question. It's not, why is there a revolt in Egypt? The question is, how did it happen so quickly, and who was behind it? Aren't those the two questions?
And why now? Why not a year ago? Why not a week ago?
Mm-hmm. Why exactly a few days after the U.S. A judge in Florida, for example, almost concurrently overturned socialized medicine in America? How did that happen at the same time? How did that get swept out of the news that Obama had overreached our own autocratic ruler? Let's not forget that Obama's the same autocrat as Mubarak, only he doesn't have the power Mubarak has to enforce his autocracy. He's done everything he can as fast as he can to take over this country and be a one-man strong man.
guy Obama, Mike, and Clinton, Hillary Clinton, it's like my eyes are glazed over.
Oh, no, Hillary Clinton is absolutely the most frightening of all. I've never seen anything like it. That false smile, that absurd commentary, being on the side of the protesters 3 days ago, it was eerie. It was eerie. It was like watching the Manchurian candidate.
It's all double talk, and the media people just eat it up and spit it out.
Well, who on Fox News most disappointed you?
I'd say I've watched O'Reilly, but he's not getting it any better. I mean, Hannity had a few people on that weren't bad, but nobody seems to be able to dig into this to give some real insight.
Well, okay, Stuart, you're asking for something that none of us can provide because we're not privy to the puppeteers. We don't know who actually orchestrated this. We can only assume it's the U.S. government in cahoots with other more nefarious forces. And the reason I say that is a report came out over the weekend in WorldNet Daily, which I quoted, which I think I haven't gone into in enough detail. Did you happen in all of this hysteria to read the story about the troubling relationships with the Muslim Brotherhood and the Obama administration? That goes back quite a while.
Right.
Did you read about any of this, about the news that the Muslim Brotherhood members met with the State Department? Did you read any of the fact that Muslim Brotherhood members were invited to attend Obama's 2009 address to the Muslim world from Cairo?
You've been talking.
Did you read that Khaled Hamza, editor of the Muslim Brotherhood website, confirmed at that time that 10 members of the Muslim Brotherhood's parliamentary bloc received official invitations to attend Obama's historic speech? Did you read any of this?
No, Mike. And we know what's behind it. Just they don't know who's behind this, just like they don't know where Osama bin Laden is. Come on.
Okay. I believe that the conspiracists will be working overtime in short order. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation. So everything changed today. Two elements changed. We didn't know whether Egypt's military and security elite would support Mubarak. They are apparently doing so right now. The other guess is whether the pro-democracy so-called protesters who are in the streets of Egypt would sustain their momentum. We don't know if that's going to continue. We know that we're getting firsthand reports that the Muslim Brotherhood is passing out money in certain areas to keep people in the streets. In other words, they're a rent-a-mob in some areas. You're not seeing any footage of the middle class hiding behind their doors, protecting their stores. None of the vermin in the media have bothered to show you the middle class cowering in fear as the rioters race across the streets. You're not seeing much about the thousands of violent prisoners who escaped or were released from jails by the radical Muslim elements in the country. Remember who these prisoners are. Many of them are outright criminals, but many of them are also vicious, murderous Islamists. They're all in cahoots together, robbing, looting, and causing havoc throughout the country, and the Egyptians are furious and frightened by this. Again, you haven't heard that from the U.S. government. Are the protesters united? We don't know that. Is El Baradei the Lone Ranger? Is he the man on the white horse who's going to save Egypt? Absolutely not. His history at the IAEA, the Atomic Energy Agency, was one of blocking any attempts to control Iran's nuclear desires. So he's a front man for Iran in some ways. In other ways, he's an absolutely useless European bureaucrat. So he's not going to unite the people. The Egyptians need and want a strong man. And so who is the strongman who will replace Mubarak, an ex-Air Force officer? Do you know a name?
Savage.
God bless America. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I feel at a time like this, we have to be unified, especially when we have a government that is not of the people, by the people, or for the people. We have a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the internationalists. And so therefore, we the people have to keep our country together. We cannot permit the nefarious forces who have brought down the government of Egypt to do the same in this country by bringing down the people themselves. Just play it louder. Go ahead, guys. I'll be quiet for a minute. Welcome back to the program called The Savage Nation. In the middle of the night, I woke up and I heard I didn't hear a voice. I thought, okay, let's say I thought. I turned it into some. And the thought was, play the national anthem. Where the thought came from, I don't know. It came from me. Came from my dreams. I played the national anthem. Why did I play the national anthem? Because I'm watching the world burn around me because of a weak leftist leader who is either knowingly involved in all of this turmoil or is incapable of stopping it. In either case, it doesn't matter. We are living through tumultuous times. We're watching a revolution going on in Egypt. God forbid it spreads to Jordan and to Yemen. And then, of course, there'll be a war with Israel. God forbid this happens, all because of a weak leftist leader who makes Jimmy Carter look like a dream conservative by comparison. New York, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good evening. I'm an Egyptian-American.
Yes.
And I would just like to give you my 2 cents.
I want to hear it because that, by the way, that's all we can all do. All we can do is give our 2 cents. We don't know what's going on, do we? But what's your 2 cents?
Okay. My opinion is, as you know, that Mubarak is going to be 82 years by the end of the year. He's 82. And it's
yes.
Going to be, his term is going to finish by the end of this year. And the CIA. The always ahead of the, out of the game. So the planning to put Omar Suleiman.
I'm sorry, the CIA is behind this and wants to put who in power?
Omar Suleiman.
So why would they want Suleiman in power?
Yeah, he's American and he's a strong man and he's shrewd and he's smart.
But wait a minute, you say that they're not willing to wait for Suleiman to take power in September? They want him in place now?
No. What I'm trying to say is, you see, I mean, for election, I mean, it cannot just take overnight. So he's going to be preparing from now till September.
So you're alleging that the CIA orchestrated this revolution in Egypt, and they're risking destroying an entire nation in order to put in Suleiman?
No. I'm not saying to destroy. I'm trying to say that just preparing, somebody will take over.
Well, let's back up together. You're an Egyptian-American, so you're closer to it than I am. So, you know and I know the middle class is terrified of what's going on. Do we agree on that?
Yes.
Okay. So, therefore, who is it who's attacking the middle class in Egypt is the question.
Well, I mean, don't forget that. I mean, it's he's Mubarak has been for 30 years, and there's a lot of hunger. People they live on $2 in
I understand they make nothing. They the food prices have been escalating, fuel prices have been escalating. So how in the world are jobs going to be created by overthrowing Mubarak? What's the thinking of that? Now that the infrastructure is destroyed and tourism is destroyed, you're thinking unemployment will be lower or higher?
No, if you look at the the people that they're running around, they're all like in the series, and that's why they are. Yeah, I mean they fed up with that.
Yes, they are the useful idiots of other forces, and we're trying to guess who these other forces are. Who are these useful idiots? The people in their 30s. Who are somewhat westernized, who have the little devices in their hands, who think that a flash mob with a bicycle is the same thing as overthrowing a nation. Who is it who's pulling their string? Who started this?
They are educated also. They are educated, but they are set up. They finish college, and there is no job for them. So, I mean, this guy...
I understand. So now there's going to be a job for them now that the country is in flames? Now there's going to suddenly be a job for them?
what he wanted to do. I mean, you know, enough is enough. I mean, it's been 30 years.
So, in other words, you burn a country to the ground in order to have a better life?
No. I'm not just saying, you know, either the up or the sky.
No,
or
no, we saw the same thing in America. Newark was once a beautiful city, and the so-called dispossessed minorities in the inner city burnt the city to a ground, and Newark has never recovered. There are areas of Los Angeles that were once paradises that police won't even go into because the so-called dispossessed minorities have trashed these neighborhoods. They never recover from these things.
But, you know...
All right, it's enough already. New York, Mahar, WOR, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. So the last caller said enough was enough, and they're willing to destroy the nation in order to have a better life. That makes good sense. Great sense, Mahar. You see it the same way?
No, I don't see it the same way, Michael. So let us start over and reorganize some of the correct things that have been said by callers earlier. First,
yes.
Before I start, let me tell you that I'm a Coptic Orthodox Christian. I am an attorney and also a member of the Egyptian Bar Association. So
great.
I will give you...
Thank goodness we have an educated man who's Egyptian who can help us figure this out. So, just before you begin, did you hear any of my commentary of the days prior to today?
The last comments that you just made.
No, please. Did you hear any of my commentary about the Egyptian Christian community, the comments I made yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, good. So let's start from where you are.
Okay, so these rights started really as a movement from the youth that are asking Mubarak to get rid of the government and the cabinet and get a new cabinet in place and start making correct changes to the election laws that have been in place for 30 years, which were written by devils to keep everybody away from getting to the presidency, but the person that they want him to get the position. These laws were written in such a way that it made it impossible for anybody but Mubarak's son or another person from the National Democratic Party to reach to the presidency in the coming presidential elections. 2 months ago...
I'm listening to every word you're saying, and all I'm seeing is a country in flames. So the people who wanted democracy have now anarchy. Is that what they wanted? No. I mean, look at the unintended consequences of their desire for democracy. Look what it led to.
Yes, but there are foreign players here at hand. Hamas and Hezbollah used the situation after 5 days. So 2 days ago, the people that are riding in Liberty Square or Tahrir Square, these are people that are being paid by Hezbollah and Hamas to stay in that square and ask Mubarak to leave the country, so a power vacuum will be created since there is no constitutional laws in place and there is no election laws in place. Now there is no government and there is no person in charge of the country, and that's the most suitable situation for Islamic Jihad and Islamic Brotherhood to take over the country.
Exactly. Well, that's how a revolution usually produces death squads.
Why Mubarak, as an honorable man, a military man that gave his life for the past 50 years,
yes,
will not go away as these people.
That's right. That's right. People don't understand because they look upon it in a different way. He's a man of great honor. He could have left. He could have gone to London or Los Angeles or Switzerland, and he could have retired in great luxury and never be heard from again, along the order of King Farouk with a 21-gun salute. And a little sail on a yacht down the Nile. But he didn't choose that because he's a man of honor. And he also cares about his country more so than most people in America can understand. So he's actually sacrificing to stay in power is how I see it.
There are 2 million people calling for his death. And he is being threatened to be killed for the past few years. So, and he did not leave. And he would not leave. He's a man of honor, and every Egyptian that is honorable Egyptian respect that man regardless with our disagreements with his policies.
I hear you. Yeah, of course. They're not mutually exclusive. You can both disagree with him. You can still call him a tyrant, and you can still respect him. You could also say he's the best of all possible worlds for right now, which I don't hear you saying, by the way. Now, we have to deal with what's going on. Do you fear, as we do, that into this power vacuum will step Iran and their agents?
No, that will not happen, because you have 80% of the Egyptian population. We are talking about 65 million at least. Will not allow that to happen, and that's why you see today there are clashes between the paid people in the square and the Egyptians themselves, and that's why you saw the fires and the bullets.
So are you saying now that the average Egyptian is now turning on the mobs?
Yes. That's what
this cuts across all religious lines as well. It's not just, for example, Christians who are standing up saying they have the most to lose if Mubarak goes. You're saying it's ordinary men who happen to be Muslims are also fighting now for the stability of the nation.
The Egyptian Muslims and Christians right now are standing to the population, standing in the middle of the square, asking Mubarak to leave now.
Asking Mubarak to leave now. So who's now fighting them?
Asking Mubarak to leave. The people that are rioting in the square for the past 2 days are the ones that want Mubarak to leave now so they can have the chance to jump on power.
No, I understand that. So who is now on Mubarak's side? Did most of the military move on his side already?
Yeah, the military is with Mubarak. And
now this is already a different game. Yesterday, people were saying the military would not back him, or they didn't know if the military would back him. You, as a caller, believe that the military has already decided to back him.
No, the military is backing him up 100%, Michael. That's what people will not tell you. That's what the government here will not tell you.
Mubarak, they will not tell. Okay, so that's an important point. Because once the military backs Mubarak, I believe the game is over.
Mubarak have the military 100%. The military is Mubarak. Mubarak have given the military the order not to fire on the population.
Yes, I think it's an amazing situation of tremendous restraint, given what's going on, that so few have died so far. I think it's astonishing, by the way. I doubt very much if this country would have such restraint if the military ever tried to back the government. I doubt very much that they would hold their fire in the air, by what I've seen.
Michael,
after what I've seen this military, the police and military do in this country, I doubt very much if we'd be quite as lucky.
Okay. I'm sure that you heard the report that Hezbollah and Hamas are the one who freed the prisoners from a few prisons around.
Yes, I did, and we've reported on that on the program. Yes, they broke into the prisons. They released the most violent Islamists into the streets, along with common criminals, who then did the looting.
Back. If you remember, there was a couple of accidents, bombings in Sinai, correct?
Yes.
There was a couple of sleeper cells in Sinai from Hamas. They were
Here's another issue. Right now, in 2 weeks ago, Egypt was preventing the smuggling of weapons through the tunnels into the Gaza Strip. The Egyptian army was doing the best it could to prevent the Hamas from bringing in weapons through the tunnels into the Gaza Strip to bring mayhem to Israel. You and I can probably pretty much guess that with the military preoccupied, Hamas is doing its best to sneak weapons through those tunnels in order to prepare for a showdown with Israel. Would you say that's accurate?
Sales from the Palestinians inside Egypt too, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
okay. Before you go, I can hear great pain in your voice. There's turmoil in the world right now. How do you think this is going to end?
At the end, order will be restored. Mubarak will take the next few months to make the necessary changes to the constitution, make the necessary changes to the election laws in Egypt, so he can have a legal system where Egypt can proceed from here. Mubarak did not stay in power for 30 years by choice. He was forced to stay in that seat.
I hope you're correct, but I have a terrible fear that the United States government may try to have him thrown out. That would be the worst possible mistake Obama has made to date.
Michael?
Yes.
And you mark my words. United States will be incapable of pushing the Egyptian people to push their leader away in this such disgraced way. Mubarak.
I pray to God that you're right. I pray the Egyptian people are strong enough to stand up to these manipulators. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
heard from the president in what's happened in Egypt. We'll continue to keep you up to date as best we can on what goes on, knowing quite honestly that some things in foreign policy have to be done away from TV cameras.
That's the human whitefish. That's the human whitefish made of pike and contaminated carp. Robert Gibbs. I used to call him a human, the filter fish, but he's another species altogether. Some things have to be done away from TV cameras. Apparently, they did things behind the scenes here away from TV cameras, and it erupted either out of their control, or in fact, I can't believe that they would want this to have happened. My guess is that they wanted some kind of flash mob in Tunisia to result in some new leadership that they could manipulate in their own vision of things. They figured that the flash mobs, the dungaree-wearing youth of Egypt, could be manipulated to go out in the streets through some WikiLeaks leak and go out and demand that Mubarak simply walk away. They thought Mubarak was 80. Being an octogenarian, he would leave quietly like King Farouk did in the 1950s. Interestingly enough, it's funny King Farouk came up several times today when he was overthrown in 1952. I remember I just talked about it 2 weeks ago to somebody. I said, as a joke, I said, I remember King Farouk as a little boy. I was a small boy in America, seeing a picture of him when he was in exile in New York City. He was a big fat guy, and they showed a picture of him sitting on a bar stool in one of the Upper East Side drinking holes with his large derriere spread over a bar stool drinking all day. And I thought it, wearing a fez, and I remembered that imagery as a kid because the Daily News had it on the front. And, of course, I didn't know much about who he was other than he was the ex-king. He was thrown out. But he left quietly. He took a 21-gun salute and sailed away on the Nile because he was sort of an inheritance case, a decadent man, no military background, no spine, in other words. But Mubarak is not King Farouk. And this is something that I guess the decadents in the White House do not understand. He doesn't think the way they do. He is a true commander-in-chief as opposed to a tin soldier. And so when you put a tin soldier against a commander-in-chief, a real commander-in-chief, the outcome is not exactly what the tin soldier would like. Let's put it in those terms, if you'd like. There are many ways to look at this. And no one knows what the outcome is. We know it's extremely fluid, as they say, and things have changed today. While the American media was all on the same page calling for the overthrow of Mubarak, in fact, some of the idiots on CNN called them thugs. They actually called the military thugs. Can you believe this? The mobs the day before were not thugs. Those who almost burnt the Egyptian Museum to the ground were not thugs. But to Mr. Gergen, David Gergen, the people now who are trying to clear up the mess, they're the thugs, not those who try to burn the Egyptian Museum to the ground. Amazing to watch this. I dread getting up in the morning to turn the news on to see what's going to happen next. I got to tell you, it's very difficult, which is why when I got on the air today, I said to the guys, play the Star Spangled Banner, because the American people have no leadership. We never see the flag. We never hear the American national anthem under Obama because he's an internationalist. We see no loyalty to the country. We see everything the opposite of what we believe in. And we all pray for this country on a daily basis. So as I say to you, play the national anthem now on the way out the door so that the people can have something to hang on to. God bless America. That's all I can say. God bless America. Save us from the communists in the White House.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
to many outside observers, it seems as though Obama has been in conspiracy, even in a loose way, with the rioters in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Jordan, and elsewhere. Note that Obama did not step in at the beginning and say, although Mubarak has been authoritarian, we support him because he's been a friend of ours for 30 or 40 or more years, and he's a good force for stability in the Middle East. We need stability in the world, and we're going to do everything we can to help Mr. Mubarak until he leaves office. He didn't say that. The day after Mubarak says he's going to step down in September, both Hillary Clinton, lifetime Leninist, Obama, a Leninist revolutionary, in my analysis, come out and say it's time for Mubarak to go. I fear that tomorrow we will see Obama saying we're sending the U.S. military in to help the rioters, not to help the government of Egypt. Follow the logic of where this goes. Is this in the interests of America? It is not. It's against the interests of America. It's against the interests of democracy. It's in the interests of the Islamists. How could anyone not see this? It seems to me I'm not the only one who sees this. I can read between the lines. I am watching this on a daily basis. What's most astonishing to me is the absolute lack of judgment, knowledge, depth, historical analysis on the part of anyone in the media, especially those that you'd expect it from, at so-called Fox News. I'm not going to repeat what they've been saying, because most of it is juvenile. They're out of control. They're out of their league. They seem to think this is a civil rights movement. They've taken the bait hook, line, and sinker. They're repeating the party line of the radical international left. There's no difference between the commentary on MSNBC, Fox News, or CNN. It is all virtually the same. The people are the oppressed minority. The leadership must go, etc. I don't see it that way. I don't see it that way at all. I think that all of the cable news, Fox included, whose ratings are imploding, have drifted so far to the left that they're indistinguishable from CNN. And which nominally conservative cable news personalities do you suspect now are actually liberals? Do you feel that Fox News personalities such as Shep Smith, Andrew Napolitano, and Neil Cavuto are part of an organized government media effort to hand power to the Islamists in Egypt? Do you believe Obama has carefully arranged the current riots in Egypt and is doing the same thing in Tunisia, Jordan, and Yemen? Many of us do. If you do, what do you fear Obama's motivation is for this? Where was the first place in the media you heard the idea that Obama might be deliberately causing this unrest in Tunisia and in Egypt? We know that anti-Mubarak forces are now battling pro-Mubarak forces in the streets of Cairo. Why is the media only now telling us that there's another side in this so-called democratic revolution? Where suddenly did they see that there are two sides? How come until today it was only one side, evil Mubarak against the people? Did they not see what would occur? Egyptian protesters were heard screaming, Camp David made us a slave. They want war with Israel. And do you think that the tunnels between Egypt and Gaza, which were guarded and controlled by the Egyptian military, are suddenly going to be opened to the Hamas terrorists, if not already so? Don't you expect weapons are being smuggled into the Gaza Strip by the Hamas group because the Egyptian army is occupied elsewhere? And so therefore there will soon be a war with Israel. This is a very extremely dangerous situation, and our government is once again either behind it or on the wrong side. Turmoil's hitting Yemen, Jordan. Everywhere we have friends, they are in trouble. Why is it that the president is not out there saying we're going to defend our friends and back our friends? Moreover, we read that leftists in the media, such as Anderson Blooper and others, were surrounded by mobs who attacked them in Egypt. They couldn't have attacked them too badly because obviously they live to tell the story and they don't even look too roughed up to me. It seems to me that they did it for little ratings. God only knows what happened there. But the Middle East tensions have a direct potential to lead to nuclear war. I said that the other day. The tensions in the Middle East have the direct potential to lead to nuclear war. Where is this coming from? It is now coming from leaked diplomatic documents that were released by WikiLeaks cables. Tension in the Middle East before this have given rise to an escalating atomic arms and missiles race, which has the direct potential to lead to a nuclear war. If you think rogue states are not going to get their hands on some of the Egyptian nuclear material, if there is any Egyptian nuclear material, you are mistaken. In either case, this is very, very dangerous. But there's long-running hostilities between India and Pakistan, both are nuclear nations. There could be a nuclear conflict there. What's liable to happen in India after this? Which side will Obama be on that? Where is the government? How about North and South Korea? How about China and Russia? My friends, listen to me. This is very dangerous. When stability goes in one part of the globe, it goes in another part of the globe. Look at what's happened to this country and this world in the 2 years that this radical communist has taken over America. Take a look at what's gone on in the world in the 2 years since this radical communist took over the United States of America. He introduced socialized medicine. He nationalized the automobile industry. He appointed one communist czar after another. He has appointed more power to unions than the last 50 years in the United States of America. Yes, my friends, that was only the beginning. And he's only been in office for 2 years. He says he's transformational. Well, what does that actually mean? Both his fathers were Muslim. Do you think that has any influence upon his worldview? I certainly do. The fact of the matter is, I'm sure it does, as it would if it were you who had two Muslim fathers. The fact of the matter is, this man does not seem to have very much interest in the United States of America as an entity, as a nation, with any shared history with the people. I think he has more interest in some global concept of where America fits, and he's breaking up the eggs around the world in order to make a new omelet. Remember what Karl Marx said, in order to make an omelet, you have to break some eggs. He is following the Leninist Marxist party line to the last egg on earth. I tried to warn you in Trickle Up Poverty, the most prescient book of the season, and that's all I can say to you right now on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Question is, how is this going to affect you in Pittsburgh or New York or Florida or San Francisco or wherever you are? Does this really affect you directly in any way? It does. In addition to the obvious such effects such as oil prices, it affects you in a more profound way because here in California we have a governor who has already taken his 1960s baseball cap and put it back on, and he said, unless we continue to raise taxes in California, the highest tax state in the land, by the way, unless we continue to raise taxes in the state of California, said Governor Jerry Brown, the legitimate grievances of the young people in Egypt are liable to be seen here in California. I heard this crap in the 60s when the radicals would go to college campuses and say, unless we get our way, we don't know what might happen on this campus. It's the same exact rubbish that was used by the radicals in the 60s being used here in America. Already one demagogue is using it, and that's Jerry Brown. God knows who will use it tomorrow in the Democrat Party, saying, unless we do this for the illegal alien, they're liable to riot. Unless we give them the DREAM Act, they're liable to riot. Unless we give them citizenship, they're liable to riot. You name it, they're going to use it as sure as I'm sitting here, because they know the Alinsky playbook. They know the Rahm Emanuel playbook, which is never let a crisis go to waste. And if you think that the White House is not going to use this crisis that they might possibly be involved with, and there's good evidence that they met with some of the radicals over the last few months or weeks, they scurried them into Washington for some State Department meetings and then smuggled them back into Egypt. If you think they're not involved at some level of the government, I disagree with you. The question is, and I can't answer it, why would Barack Obama wish to see Mubarak fall? Why would he want moderate Arab regimes to fall? Now, you could rush to conclusions and say, because he's a Trojan horse for the radical elements. I don't believe that's true. Personally, I don't believe that's true. But it's very worrisome that he hasn't made a stronger case for moderating Muslim influences in the Middle East. That's very worrisome, by the way. The phone number here, you know already, the website, you know, protesters now want Mubarak out immediately. He gave an address saying he will not run for re-election when his term has expired in this fall. But the fact of the matter is, the protesters who are massed in the streets want him out sooner. Nobody likes chaos in the world. I mean, there are those who want chaos because they capitalize on it. And mainly in this country, you have a division between liberals who like chaos. They teach chaos. They want chaos in order to reform society. That's what Obama specializes in as a community organizer, which is chaos. They capitalize on chaos, and they then try to, quote, transform the society. What Obama has done to this society on a local level, on a national level, is a minor form of a transformation. But if you look at the history of empires of the past, whether it be the ancient Egyptian empire or any other Near Eastern empire, or in fact any other empire, what you find are people who are jealous in adjoining areas. They're jealous of civilizations that they see around them, and they're greedy for their riches. That's exactly what we see inside America itself. We have millions upon millions of illegal aliens who are jealous of this society and greedy for the riches of this society. And yet we have a corrupt government in cahoots with very powerful business interests who continue to cater to this enemy within, because in fact, when you have millions of people who are disenfranchised in that manner, you know that eventually they're going to erupt. And then you have demagogic politicians who are going to exploit this as far as they can without calling for an outright riot here and there, although they do it once in a while. And then eventually it explodes. So, yeah, there are direct parallels to what's going on in Egypt in many ways. And it's under the surface in this country. But most of us who are conservative do not like instability. We do not like chaos. We like order. And we would like to see this order that we see in America continue. It will not continue. It has not continued. In fact, there's probably been more rapid social changes under Obama in 2 years than there have been in the previous 20 here in the United States of America. And that's why it was a very good thing when the second federal judge slapped him down on Obamacare, which was clearly a power grab, autocratic, and unconstitutional. Now, let's go back to Mesopotamia. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's look at the Sinai. That sounds too much like a high school class that I fell asleep in, so I won't do that. I mean, I always fell asleep during history. I couldn't stand it. It made no sense to me. I wasn't interested in it. And, of course, as I've gotten more mature, I've come to see how important it is to understand history, or else really without a context, you don't know what's going on. Moreover, when you see the children with the dungarees, with the blackberries in this country and around the world, who are as ignorant a generation as any has ever existed, perhaps even more so, perhaps the dumbest generation in history, all they do is sit and communicate with each other on cell phones about trivia. All they do is twittering their time away. Do you think they really have a context of history? Do you think these people who twitter their time away understand in the slightest what is going on both in this country and in Egypt? I know they don't. And so therefore, in this chaos, the leftist college professors tell them, oh, this is very much like our civil rights movement. It's simply the Egyptians wanting equality and democracy. And so the Twitterers buy that line because it's simple for them, and it permits them, without any intellectual energy, to go on to their next Twittering. And consequently, we have an entire generation of fools, and they have no leadership. The The job of a leader, that is a president or a politician, is to explain to the population in as simple terms but as accurate terms as possible what is going on both domestically and internationally and put it in context for them. Do you actually think that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or John Boehner has explained what is going on in the proper context? Because I know they haven't. I don't think that Boehner himself knows what's going on. I think he is so over his head it's frightening. Hillary Clinton may know better, but I don't trust Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama probably knows what's going on, but I don't trust Barack Obama to tell us the truth. And so therefore, it falls upon the media, the few of us in the media who have some education, who have the capacity and the willingness to study history, and to put it in context, to act as the Paul Revere's for this society, and to tell you that what is happening in the Middle East is having direct effects on America. And it's only going to have even more effects in the very short, in the very near future. What is going on, we don't have any ability to control anymore. It's out of control. We certainly could put a stop to this hemorrhaging. We certainly could send the military to the Suez Canal to protect the flow of oil and other goods through the Suez Canal. But I would guess that if you asked 9 out of 10 American college students where the Suez Canal is, when it was built, how it was built, at what cost was it built, and why was it built, 9 out of 10 of them would not know the answer to that question. They would assume it's simply a natural schism in the waterways between the vast Mediterranean, which it is not. And so, therefore, what hope is there for this country? The hope is to continue doing my job, and you continue to do your job. You continue to educate yourself, and hopefully you explain to people on a daily basis exactly what is going on. So, for example, in San Francisco, I heard two, man, they look like reasonably educated white men in their 50s. I heard them discussing what was going on in Egypt, and one said to the other, I think rather intelligently, he said, well, there are some parallels with Iran, but they're not direct, and I wouldn't worry about it. That's the naive, urbane, liberal attitude, which is that, oh, yes, it's true that Jimmy Carter undermined the Shah of Iran, and unfortunately the Muslims, the radical Muslims, took over a moderate Muslim nation. But we shouldn't worry about it, they say, because it won't happen here. It can't happen here. Let's put our head in the sand. Why won't it happen there? Why should it not happen in Egypt? Who is going to prevent it from happening? I don't see America trying to stop it from happening. Do you?
Savage.
Look, we know about the federal judge in Florida who has just ruled the other day that Obamacare is just what we've said it is, unconstitutional, dictatorial, autocratic, whatever you want to say. Joining us now on the Savage Nation to give us opinion of what the ruling really means and what is coming is Ilya Shapiro, a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute. Ilya, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on. It has been an eventful week indeed.
What did you get from the ruling?
Well, this is the broadest, most significant ruling by a federal judge against Obamacare. The Judge Vinson said that the individual mandate, the requirement that everyone has to buy health insurance, is not grounded in Congress's power to regulate commerce or any other power. And he said that the distinction between activity and inactivity is a real one, meaning Congress can regulate an economic activity that's ongoing, like running a business or, in the famous New Deal case, Wickard versus Filburn, growing wheat, but Congress cannot force somebody to become a business, to run a business, or to grow wheat, or to buy wheat, these sorts of things. There's a significant difference between regulating an existing commercial transaction or economic undertaking and mandating, requiring that individuals engage in economic activity. To allow this to go forward, Judge Vinson said, would be to destroy any limiting principles on federal power. Because at that point, any decision not to buy something or not to do something, frankly, can, in the aggregate, substantially affect interstate commerce, which would then swallow the rest of the Constitution, and we might as well not have a written Constitution at all.
Well, where do you think it goes from here?
Right. There's two things to build on from just the idea that the individual mandate is unconstitutional. Going further than Judge Hudson in Virginia did in December, Judge Vinson, in performing what's called a severability analysis, meaning is this problematic provision severable from the, can you separate it from the rest of the legislation? And he said that you can't. Because the individual mandate is so inextricably tied to the operation of the whole new system of regulation of health care that the legislation puts in place, the whole thing has to fall. It's not the role of a judge, Vinson said, to pick and choose through a 2,700-page bill and say this is okay, this is not, this is okay, etc., because that would be effectively rewriting the legislation, which is a job for the legislature, for Congress, not for a judge. So the whole thing has to fall, even though specifically when he went into the analysis, the individual mandate is what he focused on for what's unconstitutional. But after that, even given that he said that all of it was unconstitutional, you're asking the right question. What can the government do? What is the practical effect? And here it's a little murky because he denied the state's request for an injunction. But he did say that in issuing his declaratory judgment, meaning the word of a federal judge that something is unconstitutional, declaring what the law is, he says that in this context, when it's federal officials who are the defendants, and we can presume that federal officials, the federal government, will follow the law, will accept a court order, that no injunction is necessary. It would be superfluous. This judgment would be enough. And so there's actually been some conflicting commentary. I can tell you, even within the Cato Institute, some of my legal colleagues disagree what the practical effect is. Does this mean that the government is prevented from implementing or enforcing any aspect of Obamacare right now until a higher court stays Judge Vinson's order? I tend to lean towards that position, but it's also plausible to say that it only affects, say, the Northern District of Florida, where the decision was made, plus the parties to the action. So those 26 states, the two individuals, and the National Federation of Independent Business, the plaintiffs in the case, which is hard to read. So I think that's one aspect of the decision that's not fully clear, but I'm sure that this will be moot soon, because when the government moves to appeal the decision to the 11th Circuit, to the appellate court, that court will stay the decision pending appeal.
Well, how long until that happens?
Well, the government has, like in any case, the losing party has 45 days to file a notice of appeal, and obviously that's coming. The administration isn't about to just say, oh, okay, this is fine, we'll just let this stand. So the appeal will be coming. Just like the appeals are ongoing in the 6th and 4th Circuit, there's been three other cases that have decided on the constitutional merits, the issue of Obamacare, and specifically the individual mandate, with two judges going in the government's favor, and now this was the second one that was going for the challengers. So three appellate courts now, at least, will be considering the issues. Briefing is ongoing. There will be argument later this spring, with decisions expecting to come down in the summer or fall, and eventually landing on the Supreme Court's doorstep late this year, and we can expect a decision from the Supreme Court probably by June of 2012, of next year. This is unless, of course, Congress and the President get together and repeal the individual mandate and replace all of the provisions that are dependent on it with something else.
Yeah, but will they do that?
Well, the longer that we've gone through this litigation, the greater the tide has been flowing towards the challengers of the law, the states and others who believe that it's unconstitutional. And so even as a lot of critics or proponents of Obamacare were saying when these lawsuits were first filed in March of last year that this is frivolous and political sour grapes and so forth, now nobody's saying that. Now, the administration is running scared a little bit, and I think they won't forge a political compromise immediately, but if the appellate courts start deciding in a way that's similar to the way Judge Vinson did this week, then we can see some movement, perhaps not wanting to get it to the Supreme Court or risking that the Supreme Court will strike down this fundamental piece of legislation. That kind of pressure might work to forge a compromise.
Well, what's next?
That's, it really depends how the appellate courts treat this. And we can probably expect, based on the composition of those courts, now the panels that will be hearing the cases are going to be randomly assigned. We don't know who those are. But presumably one or more of these cases will go en banc, meaning the entire court, all of the judges, there's 16 on the Sixth Circuit, there's 14 on the Fourth Circuit, a similar number on the 11th. We can expect, based on the presidents who appointed these judges, that's a crude measure of how we can expect them to decide these cases, they might go in different directions, and certainly at least one court is likely to support the challenges and go against the government. So it's kind of high-stakes poker at that point, and We'll see which way the political winds are blowing, how much political capital the president feels he has, and the senators who are going to be up for re-election in 2012. It'll be a different scenario than the one that's going on right now with a vote expected in the Senate on repeal.
Well, you think they're going to continue to push their agenda despite this ruling?
Well, that's the $64 trillion question, I guess. It depends how the political winds flow. If I were to bet on how the Supreme Court would come down now, I can tell you it's going to be 5-4 one way or the other. I can tell you Justice Kennedy is going to be the swing vote. Which way? It's really hard to tell. I'm a legal analyst, not a fortune teller. So, I think the odds are about even now which way it could go. That's an improvement over what I would have said 6 or 8 or 10 months ago. And as far as the political process goes, the president probably is not going to want to risk a Supreme Court opinion going firmly against him. So I could see him wanting to put in whatever kind of compromise is then possible that leaves in as much of his big legislation as can be left, and perhaps modifying the individual mandate, changing it to having a complicated tax credit structure. There's a number of alternatives that effectively accomplish the same thing that might be more palatable politically.
Well, sure, okay.
Judge Vinson was very careful to show that this case is more than about health care, and indeed he starts by talking about that it's principally about our federalist system and raises important issues about the constitutional role of the federal government. That's something that I and people from the side supporting the challenges to Obamacare have been saying all along. I'm not a health policy expert. My colleagues could tell you lots of different ways to reform what is a very broken status quo. But regardless, whatever type of policy proposal Congress wants to present, either in the health care or other realm, it has to fit within its constitutional bounds. Because otherwise, we throw out the Constitution and it's just running the government at the point of a gun, what kind of votes you can assemble. And that's not the way that our constitutional order is supposed to work. There are supposed to be principled limits on the federal government, and specifically here, the enumeration of the powers of Congress in Article 1, Section 8. And as Judge Vinson said, this goes beyond that, and nothing can save it. Just waving your hands and saying that health care is different and we're all going to be part of this unique market sooner or later, that does not cut the constitutional muster. Even if it may be true, which nobody concedes as a matter of practice.
Ilya Shapiro, thanks again for being on The Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on anytime.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
I have in my hands a book called The Importance of Living by Lin Yutang. Those of you who have listened to my show since 94 understand the charm of this man and how I've talked for years about the book, The Importance of Living, which I discovered when I was 18 and going through my sufferings of young Werther phase. And I thought, oh, life is horrible, I can't take it anymore. And I found this book, The Importance of Living, where he brought the yin and yang together. He taught me that we are basically, although we have a soul, that we're monkeys. Our bodies are that of a monkey. I mean, I know many of you are offended by that, but truthfully, it's been put another way, that we're the Neanderthal diet. But you got to remember that the human body is that of an animal. No matter how you think you're saintly, the minute you disconnect from the fact that you have an animal body, you go crazy. And that's where all your trouble begins. Anyway, this book put me together because there were chapters in it like, let me give you an example. Lin Yutang, The Importance of Living. I didn't write it, by the way. I'm not Lin and I'm not Yutang. But I never saw a book like this, which talked about views of mankind, Christian, Greek, and Chinese, our animal heritage, the monkey epic, on being mortal, on having a stomach, on having strong muscles, on having a mind, and on human dignity and the rise of human civilization. Then he goes into enjoyment of life. That's what I'm getting at. And he talks about whole chapters on sex, on celibacy, a freak of civilization. My favorite chapter was The Enjoyment of Living, on lying in bed. A whole chapter on lying in bed, on sitting in chairs, on conversation, on tea and friendship, on smoke and incense, on drink and wine games, on food and medicine, the inhumanity of Western dress, on house and interiors. And I remember I read this when I was 18 years old, which goes back quite a few decades. And when I first stumbled upon it, I was astounded by this. And it was a combination of sort of our animal bodies with our spiritual beings. In a way, I had never been able to unify the two. You know, kids grow up, they don't know what they are. Either you run too much in one direction or too much in the other. Either you become too much of the spiritual and you try to deny the body, or you become too much of the animal, you know, the pleasure seeker, and you deny your spirit. And this book, for me, brought it all together. And one of the favorite parts for me was Chin's 33 Happy Moments. And I don't know if the people listening to this show, since I'm in a sort of different mood today and I had enough with Obama, this stuff was good stuff. And it was the happy moments of a Chinese as described by a 17th century playwright in China named Chin Shengtan. And he wrote about, he sat with his friends when they were locked up in a temple for 10 days on account of rainy weather, and they thought about what were the truly happy moments of human life, moments in which the spirit is tied up with the senses. And he writes about them, and I'm not going to read all of them to you. I'm going to give you a taste of some of them, and you'll see if you get a kick out of them. Here's one. See if it strikes you as a happy moment in your life. I wake up in the morning and seem to hear someone in the house sighing and saying that last night someone died. I immediately ask to find out who it is and learn that it is the sharpest, most calculating fellow in town. Ah, is this not happiness? Remember this? Remember he wrote that happiness does not consist in the flights of poets, of that kind of thing, but happiness consists in getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off the roof? That's what I was trying to talk about. In other words, that's human nature. Is this normalcy? And also, if you get pleasure in seeing someone you hate fall off a roof, don't be guilty about it. Everyone likes to see their evil neighbor fall off a roof. Here's another one. Wait. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. First of all, that unto itself is beautiful. We work so damn hard in America. We never lay in bed. We think it's bad for our hearts. The opposite is true. I'm a big believer in laying in bed. I believe that laying in bed is way underestimated. I think we're just crazy with our running and our dashing and our this and our that. Anyway, listen to this one. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. Suddenly, I hear a chorus of birds announcing a clear day. Quickly, I pull aside the curtain, push open the window, and see the beautiful sun shining and glistening, and the forest looks like having a bath. Ah, is this not happiness? Okay. Let's see, then. Here's another. A few more. It's so disconnected from today. Here, I love this one. To cut with a sharp knife a bright green watermelon on a big scarlet plate of a summer afternoon. Ah, is this not happiness? You get the picture? In other words, can you see a watermelon on a hot day and just cutting it and get pleasure out of it? That's what he's talking about. We've lost this. We think that because the ad men have so jumbled our brains, the madmen, the advertising, that we have to go somewhere to find happiness. We have to buy something to find happiness. We all know that that's rubbish. I've long wanted to become a monk, but was worried because I would not be permitted to eat meat. If then I could be permitted to become a monk and yet eat meat publicly, why then I would heat a basin of hot water and with the help of a sharp razor shave my head clean in a summer month. Ah, is this not happiness? To keep 3 or 4 spots of eczema in a private part of my body and now and then to scald or bathe it with hot water behind closed doors. is this not happiness? I mean, does this translate well anymore? I mean, I love this book. It reminds you how simple things are. You know, a few more because it's getting... I love this one. Wait. A traveler returns home after a long journey. And he sees the old city gate and hears the women and children on both banks of the river talking his own dialect. Ah, is this not happiness? Now, let's say we don't have an old city gate and we don't have our own dialect, or do we? We certainly do have regional accents. How about when you've been on a long business trip and you come back to your city or your town and just the sound of the horns and just the sound of the cab driver, even if he's from Bengali, even if he is a Bengali. Isn't that what makes you feel good and at home and happy? That's what we're talking about. Here's a nice one. I am not a saint, and I am therefore not without sin. In the night I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease. I am not a saint, and I'm therefore not without sin. In the night I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease about it. Suddenly I remember what is taught by Buddhism, that not to cover one's sins is the same as repentance. So then I begin to tell my sin to the entire company around, whether they are strangers or my old friends. Ah, is this not happiness? Sort of sounds like Oprah. Here's one that I've really lived by. This is me. To open the window and let a wasp out of the room. Ah, is this not happiness? That's a good one. Have you ever let a wasp out of a room or a fly and felt something? Huh? I have. I've done that. To see someone's kite line broken. Ah, is this not happiness? To see a wild prairie fire. Ah, is this not happiness? To have just finished repaying all one's debts. Ah, is this not happiness, Obama? Now, if he went to China and said, I'm finished repaying my debts, by the way, see if you can collect it. Then I would say I would love the guy. You know what I'm saying? To end that little... But I'm willing to negotiate right now 10 cents on the dollar. Then I would say, ah, is this not happiness?
Savage.